From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 16th day of November 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. It's National Farm City Week. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Greg Johnson. He's with TGM Total Grain Marketing right here in Champaign County, Illinois. And we'll take up the weather forecast, too, with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Along the way, I'll remind you that today is the final day to purchase your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference, at least ahead of time, for the pre-registration cost of $80, $90 if you happen to walk in Monday at the iHotel right here in Urbana-Champaign. For that event, details are online at willag.org or at farmassetsconference.com.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I'm traveling today to Kansas City for the National Association of Farm Broadcasting and have talked with Greg Johnson earlier in the day. I asked him to give me an overview of the marketplace.
Well, yesterday there was a report out that a missile had exploded in Poland and killing two people, and the fear was that it was a Russian missile, and that since Poland is a NATO country, that would draw Poland and all its out NATO allies into some kind of a response against Russia. And so the markets were concerned about a disruption of grain supply, and beans at one point were up 40 cents. Corn was up 18 cents at one point. We only finished 10 cents higher in the corn and 16 cents higher in the beans. And then overnight, it was revealed that it most likely was not a Russian missile, but maybe some Ukraine self-defense trying to shoot down Russian missiles that landed in Poland. So some of the concern from Tuesday has eased quite a bit, and as a result, the gains that we had yesterday, we're giving back some of those gains, especially in the soybean market. The corn market is hanging in there, but the soybeans are under a fair amount of pressure this morning.
Are end users on the hunt at all still for oil seeds and corn?
Yeah, exports finally picked up. We had our first decent week of exports, but we're still way behind pace on both corn and soybeans. And if that pace doesn't pick up between now and when the next USDA report comes out on December 9th, traders are thinking that the government will lower exports for both corn and soybeans in that next December report.
What are your expectations between now and the end of the year?
Well, it feels like the farmers are in pretty good shape financially. They're not really looking to sell a lot of corn. On the flip side, demand has been relatively lackluster. So I call it a case of a lack of supply versus a lack of demand. I think we're going to be stuck in a 40-cent trading range in corn. That's where we've been the last 3 months. And not to say that we can't have some unusual events like we did yesterday, possibly move out of that, move the market out of that range. But without something that we don't know about, it feels like the market is comfortable. This may be a fair price for where corn and soybeans are right now. Beans just over $14 and corn hanging around that $6.50 to $6.75 level.
Can you see that hanging on through February and March?
Well, not the beans. January, South America has planted a lot of beans. January is that critical month for soybeans. If they continue to get timely rains throughout the month of January, Brazil alone has the potential for a 5.5 billion bushel bean crop, and the U.S. only grows about 4.4 billion. So that kind of tells you how big of a crop potential they have down there. So if everything goes well, you would expect beans maybe to start selling off sometime in January. But on the flip side, they've had short crops the last 2 years. It is a La Nina year, and so I guess the jury is still out on what kind of crop to expect out of South America.
You're satisfied that things will stay fairly steady through the end of the year. Are farmers satisfied as well? You said they had plenty of money, so I guess that's the case.
I think so. I think they're willing to sell beans on a small rally, anything over $14. We've bought a fair amount of beans, and I think farmers are in that mindset that they will reward the market with bean rallies because they see the potential for a big crop in South America. So I think they're a little bit more willing to sell beans on a rally. Corn, we just haven't gotten to the price that a lot of them want. So, maybe if we get 3-4 months down the road and they haven't seen the price that they're looking for, maybe they'll lower their expectations. But as of this point, it feels like they're pretty tight holders of corn.
Thank you very much for talking with me earlier. Again, that is Greg Johnson. He's with TTM. I talked with him because I'm headed to Kansas City for the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. And today and yesterday, I was here at the iHotel for the annual Illinois Extension meeting, hosting some of those day-long events. And of course, the Farm Assets Conference is next week. Some of you made note and wrote me a note as well that the Farm Assets Conference registration page had closed earlier than I expected. It is open, but it will close later today or tomorrow, one of the two. So if you want to get yourself set up for that, you can do that now. Hey, Greg, thank you for taking the time with me today.
Thank you, Todd.
Greg Johnson is with TGM, Total Grain Marketing, from right here in Champaign County, Illinois. Don't forget that today is the final day to pre-register for the Farm Assets Conference. You can do that online at willag.org or farmassetsconference.com. We'll see you next Monday at the iHotel right here in Urbana-Champaign. It's National Farm City Week from now through Thanksgiving. University of Illinois Extension is celebrating the link between rural and urban areas. Today, we'll explore local foods and small farms production with Illinois Extension's Grant McCarty. He's an educator located in northern Illinois.
So I am in the Rockford area, and I work with fruit and vegetable growers that sell directly to consumers. This could be farmers markets, pick-your-own operations, orchards, pumpkin patches, and so forth. And I provide expert assistance when it comes to insects, diseases, getting started in new crops. And this is through visiting them at their farm. Maybe they call me up, maybe they send me an email, or they might even come to a program that I hold. I also will occasionally work with homeowners in very similar way as I work with commercial growers.
Let's talk about your face-to-face interactions with people who are working to create some produce of one form or another. How might that take place?
Sure. So it may be that we visit their farm and they show me something that they're dealing with. And it could be something that I could provide pretty confidently of the problem, provide that solution. Or it could be we connect them with University of Illinois campus plant clinic and we get a proper disease diagnosis. Sometimes it is that they are doing their own independent research and they just need some advice. They think that this is a crop they want to grow and they want to determine, you know, what do we know about it? Is this something that we would recommend them growing? Is this something they're going to encounter some challenges with? And that would be something that we would be able to hopefully confidently answer, but make me that I need to do some additional research too.
Are you more often working with consumers on their lawns and yards and such, or with those who are farmer markets types that would be delivering and selling into those areas?
Mostly with the farmers market types. While I do work with some of those backyard fruit and vegetable growers, primarily I'm working with the commercial grower scale.
And how many of them are there in the area, roughly speaking, or how wide an area do you cover?
I cover from Joe Davis to Winnebago counties. And so if you think about that, that's basically going from Galena to Rockford are my three. These are farms that maybe total about maybe 70 or so. And many of them are also selling into the Rockford area, but it's very common for many of them to be selling to the Chicago markets and Chicago farmers markets. So every Saturday, some of them will be picking, getting their produce ready, and they will be driving to Chicago to sell at those farmers markets.
I would imagine that much of your work is seasonal, meaning the kinds of diseases that you are talking with the producers or insect pests or other items are very seasonal during the growing season.
It can be. I think certainly in the summer, it's very much on call is how I tend to describe it. And then as things tend to shut down and as the season ends, we then shift over into more of our classroom education programming that many of our growers will attend in the winter time. Very similar to what they might encounter at the Specialty Growers Conference in Springfield every year. We tend to do it on a regional basis or maybe even narrow a topic to maybe a 2-hour class on a certain topic.
So you have a winter meeting season that is in person, probably also, I would think, webinar or Zoom too?
That's correct. We do a lot of the in-person. So we have a Stateline Fruit and Vegetable Growers Conference, which is a regional program that's a bit of a collaboration with U of I Extension Specialist, University of Wisconsin-Madison Specialist, and then we also may bring in other universities to provide that direct education to our specialty growers in Northern Illinois. And then we may also have those kind of one-off programs. It could be a two-hour class learning how to do some fruit tree pruning that a new grower may need some information on. As we've seen with this shift in the last couple of years towards online, we now are trying to consider how can things be hybrid? How can we offer things both for that virtual audience that now has no boundary, as well as those that is very regional, localized base.
You have mentioned the plant clinic. That's a resource on campus here in Urbana-Champaign. There will be other resources. How do you work with the professors and others that are located on campus?
The two extension specialists we work with are Dr. Casey Athey as well as Dr. Mohamed Babadoust. Dr. Athey works with entomology. Dr. Mohamed Babadoust is plant disease and plant pathology. And for both of them, we sometimes act as a conduit. It could be that they already have an established relationship. Our growers have an established relationship with both those specialists, and so they just know to seek them out. Or it could very well be that I, as an extension educator, are encountering something that my grower is dealing with, and I might reach out to Dr. Athey or Dr. Babadoust and saying, hey, we've got this issue. Could you tell us what maybe is going on? And as we know with extension, a lot of times we might be seeing something in the field that could transform their research projects for years to come. It could also be that they need a site for their research too, whether they're determining a tomato disease issue or they're concerned about an invasive pest species. It could be that finding the right partner in Northern Illinois, which I could help them find, could really supplement their research.
You are just one in a many-pronged network across the state of Illinois?
Exactly. So as much as there are, say, seven or eight of us that are local foods and small farms educators, we have numerous other extension folks that are doing very similar things in agriculture, and we're all very much connected. And especially as we've seen in utilization of technology in the last couple of years, it's not uncommon to be consulting with a farmer in Southern Illinois on an issue they might be encountering, and here I am up in Northern Illinois, and sometimes even vice versa. We also really depend a lot on those other non-governmental organizations that are doing similar work in small farm education and outreach, that we might be able to provide that extension piece that they really need for their conferences, their programs, or for maybe the clientele that they're working with, and even vice versa.
Grant, what's the favorite part of your job?
I think what you hear a lot about in extension is that every day is a little bit different. And I think that is certainly one of the things that makes me want to wake up every day and check my emails and check my phone and drop in to see what's going on with the stakeholders and the farmers that I'm working with, is that idea that everything is a little bit different. And I think what I've also found with my career and with working at extension is that I love to see how people's needs have changed over time and over years, and that I might go 2 or 3 years without hearing from a farmer, and yet he may drop in and he has a need, and here I am able to answer that, and then might hear from him 3 or 4 years from now. So that's, I think, one thing that's really special about extension, is that we are a member of a farmer's team.
Grant McCurdy is a local foods and small farms educator for University of Illinois Extension. We're celebrating National Farm City Week, highlighting some of the ways extension is woven into the social and educational fabric connecting the rural and urban areas of America. On this Wednesday, let's check in with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hi, Drew. Thank you for being with us today. I'm headed out your way. Let's start there, actually. What kind of weather will we have for the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City this week?
The weather's always good in Kansas. Don't you know that?
We're in Utopia. No.
Actually, it is going to be a good week. We're in the midst of a cold air mass like the rest of the country, and there's not going to be any precipitation while you're here. The earliest opportunity for any kind of moisture here is going to be probably midweek next week. It would be the earliest. So should be good. Sunny to partly cloudy skies, but definitely cold bias. So bring your coat.
I will indeed. Fantastic. We'll talk more about the weather in the United States in just a bit, but let's move to the growing regions, which are active at the moment. Start in Argentina, please.
Yes, Argentina did receive some significant rain this past weekend, and that was so important. Their top and subsoil moisture was critically low before that occurrence took place, and the rain was enough to moisten up the topsoil, but it did nothing for the subsoil. So the temperatures there are going to be warming up again, and so we're going to go right back to where we were before last weekend. But there is another opportunity for rain coming up as we go into this coming weekend, and so they'll have another chance for rain. As long as they keep getting a little bit of rain once in a while, you know, you're gonna keep their heads above water. But I'm a little bit concerned. They do have to come up with a greater volume of rain. Just a general soaking is going to be absolutely necessary. The temperatures are beginning to get warmer more often, and all they have to do is get hot and miss a rain event, and they've got a real serious problem. So we're going to keep an eye on them. But at least for now, the planting environment has improved temporarily. And if as long as the rain comes along this weekend, they're going to continue to see that better environment. But definitely does need to be watched. It will turn dry for a full week after that.
Well, that was my next question. Is there a drier bias after that? But apparently there is at this point. Move further to the north. I've been under the impression that most of Brazil is in pretty good shape. What are the problem areas?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Most of the country is in good shape. There's a pocket in Mato Grosso and Goiás, maybe a couple of little county-sized areas in northern Mato Grosso do Sul that have not done real well with rainfall so far this season. And the moisture profile in those areas is still running short to very short. And we do need to see a greater volume of rain in that particular area. The one thing that's been really helpful, though, for them is the fact that it has not been a very warm spring. They have had cooler than normal temperatures through most of the season so far. And so when it has rained, and it has rained a little bit, it has been enough to keep things going okay. So we aren't critically dry in that area. But if they miss a rain, like in Argentina, you know, if they miss a rain and they get warm, you know, it could be a bigger issue. But for right now, it's a relatively small area. We do see rain coming back into that region, but not until the end of the weekend and into early next week. So they will be drying out for another 5 days, 5 or 6 days maybe. And then it'll start raining. The rain event that's advertised for next week looks very good. It should be well distributed. It should be right in that area that needs it. So hopefully they'll get it. I don't know which side of the fence anyone's on. I shouldn't say it that way. But they should get the relief that they need. Now, one other comment about Brazil. Yes, things still are very good. But, you know, Rio Grande do Sul has actually had way below normal precipitation for over 2 months now. And again, because of the cooler temperature bias, their soil moisture has stayed relatively good. But they, too, are going to continue to be influenced by La Nina, which means more below normal precipitation there. And if they happen to get a little too warm, they're going to get very dry and very stressed very quickly. So we do need to keep an eye on that particular part of Brazil. But as of this moment, there's absolutely no problem down there.
Anything new with La Nina that we should know about?
La Nina has peaked. It's a very broad-based peak, so we are seeing a weakening trend. That is expected to continue over the next 2.5-3 months. It is expected to be a gradual decline. Event is still significant enough to still influence worldwide weather. And so while we're talking a little bit about South America, we will continue to have that below average precipitation bias in southern Brazil and eastern Argentina as we go on into December, maybe even early January, because of the lingering La Nina. But as it weakens, we'll start to lose that foothold and will start allowing for other weather events to have influence. So for that reason, I don't think that the dryness in South America through the summer is going to be like it was last year. So that's good news for them.
Are there other growing regions across the planet that we need to be concerned about as it's related to the La Nina?
Yes, I think there is. The biggest area that I'm watching at the moment, outside of hard rain or wheat country in the U.S., of course, that area is still very dry and it's going to stay that way for a while. But outside of the North American continent, in Southeast Asia, we're going to see a wetter bias still prevailing for a while. This is in Indonesia, Malaysia, and Philippines. La Nina alone will make them wetter biased, but they're going to experience enhanced rainfall starting the latter part of next week and going into the last days of November and perhaps a day or two into early December because of a Madden-Julian oscillation event. This is a phenomenon that occurs in the tropical areas, usually begins in Africa and works its way eastward through the Indian Ocean and eventually to the Indonesia-Malaysia area. And that's where this event is supposed to occur. The Madden-Julian oscillation creates a much stronger uplift in the atmosphere. In other words, rising motion is accelerated. And so in that part of the world, you know, thunderstorms are pretty abundant. And so if you bring in a Madden-Julian event, it will allow for the rising motion in the atmosphere to be enhanced so that thunderstorms become much bigger and produce much heavier rains. And so that's what we think will happen. This more robust MJO event, as we call it, will likely be over Indonesia, Malaysia, and the Philippines as we go through the second half of next week and into the following weekend. And that, in combination with La Nina, is probably going to set the stage for a little bit more broad-based flooding in some of that particular area. So we'll be watching that pretty closely because it could have some impact on a number of crops in the region, including palm oil.
And while we're in that area, speaking of vegetable oil crops, can you take a quick look at China's rapeseed growing regions for me?
Yes. As we've mentioned in past weeks, some of that Yangtze River Basin area in China has had a drier bias for quite a while. In fact, it's been a full-blown drought at times. We have managed to improve the moisture profile north of that river in the northern part of the rapeseed country in previous weeks, but areas south of the river have been critically dry for a long period of time. We've had a little bit of relief recently, but it looks like as we go forward through this next 10-day period, we're going to see much more precipitation. So finally, the opportunity for better emergence and establishment will take place. There was a lot of speculation that their rapeseed crop was going to be notably smaller because of the drought, but it looks like they may be getting enough rain at the right time to save that crop.
Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Have a great day.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joined us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Don't forget to visit our website at willag.org. There you'll be able to pick up your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference. Pre-registration closes today, so don't wait. Go right now, farmassetsconference.com or at willag.org. The conference is on Monday at the I Hotel. Complete details are on the website.